I learned one thing at this conference already, is don't sit near the conference organizer, because you might get asked at the last minute to chair the first session. Anyway, the first speaker this morning, I've had the pleasure of hearing Professor Nash Williams speak, giving his wonderful talks ever since he was at the University of Waterloo, and so it's a fitting way to begin, because he'll set a standard that will be, it'll be a good challenge for the rest of the speakers. And he's talking about an application of network flows to rearrangements of series.
In order to follow the lecture, you need a copy of this handout in front of you. Has anyone not received it? There are plenty of copies around somewhere.
Will there be a quiz?
I'll let you off there. I'm talking about joint work with David White. At an early stage in our mathematical training, we probably all learned about the rearrangement theorem, which says that if you have if sigma an is a conditionally convergent real series, that is convergent but not absolutely convergent, then by rearranging the order of its terms, you can make it converge to any sum you like. In other words, for every real number x, there exists a permutation f of the set of positive integers such that the rearranged series sigma a f of n converges with some x. What analysis courses and books tend to be silent about is what sort of permutation you would need for this purpose. You see, just to illustrate what I mean at a very trivial level, there's a permutation of the positive integers which simply interchanges the numbers 1 and 2 and leaves all the others fixed. But if we use that to rearrange our series, we should be just swapping around the first two terms of the series, and that certainly doesn't affect its sum. So there are some permutations which would be too trivial to have any effect on the sum of a series at all. And at least one bit of the sort of question at issue is how would one identify those permutations that are, so to speak, too trivial to do anything to a series. And the constraint you're worried about is that for any j, mod of sigma xi j plus 1 should be less than or equal to something. Well, you see, to achieve that, what you can do is give the edge xi j plus 1, that capacity. Capacity of its mod 1 minus mod phi of same thing minus 7. And the other edges of GF can have whatever capacities are convenient. And so again, it comes down to proving that you can send a specified amount of current through a graph from one place to another when the edges have specified capacities. Well, the Max-Lehmann-Kapp theorem again shows that you can do that. And so that essentially is what's involved in achieving this more modest objective of getting an individual point of capital T into our sequence of P currents without letting any of them stray outside capital T. In fact, the Max-Lehmann-Kapp theorem is what stops them straying outside capital T. Well, that, of course, is quite a long way from getting capital T to be the cluster set of the sequence of P currents. But what I haven't revealed is that, in fact, we only need a finite part to use a finite part of GF in making this modification of our flow. Sigma can be zero on all but finitely many edges. So what we now do is to do the same sort of thing on infinitely many disjoint finite parts of GF, and that gets infinite. And by that method, you can get infinitely many points of T, an infinite sequence of points of T into your sequence of P currents. And if that infinite sequence covers capital T densely, then all points of T will be in the cluster set of the sequence of P currents, while this proportion has ensured that no other points get into the cluster set, and so we do get exactly the right P cluster set. And so I hope that illustrates briefly, the sort by taking an illustrative case, how the Max-Lehmann-Kapp theorem is helpful in proving theorem 21. In fact, we use it twice over. We use it once to get this scalar value of plane phi, and then we use it again with new capacities in order to get the flow signal. Thank you very much.